I want to start, Jessica, with you because you've kind of been, well, Food and Water Watch has been behind the efforts to get labeling on GMOs in Illinois. Tell me about the bill that was proposed. I understand that you also, Food and Water Watch, played a part in crafting the language for that.
That's right. So we actually began working on the labeling campaign in a number of states here in the U.S. and worked really heavily on the Prop 37 campaign that was so popular in California.
But it didn't pass. How popular could it have been?
It was actually very close. I believe that they only lost by about 2%.
Yeah, it was a close vote.
Fantastic run. And we were outspent 10 to 1 by the biotech industry.
Yeah, about $14 million came in for the opposing side.
Oh, about 40. Over $40 million.
Wait a second. I'm sorry. You're right.
Were
yes,
spent
40.
By the opposing side. And so we actually thought the nonprofit organizations and some natural food businesses made a great run. Ballot initiatives are very difficult to win because of spending in the media that needs to occur. And so we thought they did a great job. And here in Illinois, we actually worked with the Center for Food Safety out of Washington, D.C. on bill language that was later introduced by Senator Dave Kaler of Peoria. And it is a bill that would require foods containing more than 1% genetically engineered ingredients to have a label indicating as such. And we're really excited about all of the support we've gotten in the legislature and the incredible groundswell of support that's come from the grassroots.
Have you done polling on this now? Do you have any sense of where you are with support in Illinois?
Here in Illinois, we don't have any statistics, but there have been studies in the last few years that show over 90% of people are in favor of genetically engineered food labeling. And so we're very confident that those statistics hold true in Illinois. And we've seen thousands of people come out to support this bill. So we're very confident.
And also in the room, I have Brian Endres, who's Associate Professor of Agricultural Law at the University of Illinois. And welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. Now, you've already testified about this bill, and you did that on June 20th of this year. Care to give me a summary? I've got the testimony right here in my hot little hands. Give me an idea of your point of view on this.
Sure. I sort of in the testimony took it from a legal perspective and went through some of the legal challenges that have been brought against mandatory labeling of biotech foods, and laid out a course where, you know, these things will pass constitutional muster. I mean, I think that there's enough significant differences between biotech and non-biotech food that consumers, in essence, have a legitimate claim that they have a right to know.
Wait, so you've actually kind of skipped a step here, which
sure.
is to say that is going to be the attack used by the opponents of this bill to say that it's not constitutional.
That's one of the attacks. And being a law professor, that's sort of where I, you know, entered the debate, is some of these constitutional issues that you basically have your compelling speech. It's a First Amendment claim by the biotech companies that are saying you shouldn't be forcing us to label something. And that's
so we don't have to say First Amendment works the opposite way, is what you're saying, too. It's not just the right to say something. It's the right to say nothing.
Absolutely.
I thought that was Fifth Amendment.
Oh, that's when you're in the criminal context, and I don't think we want to criminalize
okay.
this. We just want to label it.
All right. But is that a strong argument?
I think it has been a strong argument.
Okay, and by that I mean, okay, in the past, yes, the
sure.
argument that, no, we don't have to say anything.
Absolutely. It's been raised throughout time, whether it's cigarette warning labels or even in the biotech food context, RBST milk in Vermont. There was a whole series of litigation that went on that actually struck down a Vermont law that would have required RBST labels on milk products.
Mm-hmm.
And
is that where it stands now?
That's where it stands now. Yes.
See, I think most of us, I think us average Joes out in the street, think it should be the other way around, which is to say we are the public. We have a right to know. You don't have a right to obfuscate and lie. You need to be up front with what you have. Where's the right of the public in all of this?
Yeah, what's interesting in that Vermont case, the name of the case is Amestoy, by the way, and they said that the court, it was a split opinion, it was two judges to one in the Court of Appeals, and they said, well, if the public really demands this, the market will respond, and you'll have companies voluntarily labeling it that it's not from cows treated with RBST. And so that was...
The public doesn't know.
And that's part of the problem.
The public doesn't pay enough attention, okay, which is why groups like Food and Water Watch exist, which is why groups, you know, all of those environmental groups are out there, because they are the ones paying attention. All right, and we'll get to Megan in just a second. Hang on, Megan. You go back to the start of the GMOs in our society, which is basically the late 90s, 1996, 1997. That's not that long ago. You know, you're talking about how companies feel they have a right to withhold this information. And yet, as it came in, I'm betting that most people didn't know that this stuff was entering their food. There's a promo with Bill Curtis. I interviewed him several months ago, and he said they sneaked it in. And when Bill Curtis says it, and they sneaked it in, and he pronounces every consonant when he says that. but it's true. And then suddenly, it seems to me, then 13 years down the road, 16 years down the road, what the companies say is, oh, well, we've always done it like that. So why should we have to let folks know whether GMOs, because it'll kill our business, which is now well established. But we're only talking 16 years. So, again, I say, where's the protection for the average Joe?
Well, an interesting point that you bring up is that the biotech industry has made the claim that labeling would criminalize their products, and then people would no longer buy them. And I mean, to be fair, we're not criminalizing anything. Senator Kaler has made the great point over and over that we started labeling peanut products when allergies became a problem, and we have not vilified or criminalized, you know, the peanut by any stretch of the imagination. Trans fats are another
good point.
Thing that we're labeled.
People need to know, because people could have severe reactions to peanut.
Well, and with trans fats, you know, which people don't have severe or allergic reactions to necessarily, we see products with trans fats all the time that people continue to buy. And so if the biotech industry is making claims that, you know, people's knowledge of their products in a food would hurt their sales, then that's just an image problem that they have. And I don't think it's anyone's responsibility but their own to protect their branding and to make those products popular themselves.
You know, you did bring up Senator Kaler, but so is he the chief sponsor of the bill?
That's correct.
David Kaler out of Joliet area. And who else have you been working with on this issue?
We have a lot of great sponsors. We were working with Deb Mell, who, as you know, is now a city council person here in Chicago. And it would be wonderful if we could pass a non-binding resolution through the Chicago City Council urging Chicago legislators to approve this legislation. But we've got some great bill sponsors. John Collerton is a co-sponsor. We've also got Barbara Flynn Curry, a co-sponsor of this bill. We've got a lot of powerful legislators who are in favor of labeling, and we think that as more people become aware not only of this issue but of the bill, we'll see that continue to rise. And I will say that one of the things that I personally was surprised by was how many of our lawmakers were not aware that GMOs were present in the foods that they're eating. And so
really?
This has also been an educational campaign, I think, for a lot of people we've talked to.
Do you find that as well, Brian?
Yeah, I don't spend as much time dealing directly with the legislature, but I think as a general rule, the public is relatively unaware. I mean, your listeners are on the cutting edge.
Our listeners, yes, you know this station. The people who are listening to this show right now have heard this ad infinitum, all right, over and over again. They know the GMOs are in there. They know that the state of California had a ballot initiative. They probably know that the state of Washington has a ballot initiative right now that's mm-hmm. going to be voted on in a couple of months. Actually, I saw polls on that, and it's running very high in favor of labeling GMOs. Is that does that break the dam? Does that help unlock the key? If you get one state, does it start to move into other states?
I would say that the combination of states that's come forward, you know, even just introducing genetically engineered food labeling has been a huge help for us here in Illinois. I think that this issue has come to the forefront of the media. I think people are talking about the issue more than they ever have before. And like I was saying before, education is really the key, I think, to the success of this program. So many people become interested in genetically engineered food labeling when they realize for the first time that there are hidden ingredients in the foods that they feed their families.
But there are other kinds of hidden ingredients, too. There it seems to me that's sort of the history of food packaging in America, isn't it?
It certainly is. And here in Illinois, for instance, there was a fabulous campaign to put expiration dates on food. I think most of us would find it shocking to believe that we had to fight for expiration dates.
You know why? Because it will kill the industry if we put labeling, if we put dates, expiration dates. And that's the argument now, is that these people are saying it will kill, oh, I don't know, the whole food industry. People will stop eating food if
so
we put GMO labels. Well, I mean, I am being a little over the top with that, but isn't that, is there any indication that that would actually happen?
No, and we've done so much research. And we also have the European Union to look at. Here we have a combination of countries who have put forth restrictions. They require labeling. In a lot of those countries, you can't even grow genetically engineered food.
Yeah, but the French are involved in that. Aren't they?
Are we anti-French on this show?
No, not on this show.
Oh, no.
I'm just anticipating here.
But the interesting point is that when you look at food prices as a percentage of income in Europe versus in the United States, they're not that much different. And I'm not an economist. I want to make that clear. I'm a lawyer. But I've also studied the European Union's food labeling laws for biotech for over a decade. And there really hasn't been a difference. But what you do is you have consumers that are in control of their food supply as opposed to the agribusiness in control of the food supply. And I think that's an important distinction that we need to start thinking about in the United States. And Illinois tends to be ground zero right now because we have a tremendous food industry in Illinois. We have amazing agricultural production as soon as you get south of Interstate 80. And then we have tremendous food manufacturing here in the Chicago area. So it's, if something can happen here, it's a real signal for the rest of the country.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that it seems, of all the states, this is one where it would be very tough to get a bill. You're shaking your head no, Jessica. I'm saying because there's a lot of big ag in Illinois.
There is a lot of big ag, but there are also quite a few people. And here in Chicago,
well, there's a lot of people in Chicago. Yeah, I mean, and that's that tension between, you know, Chicago and downstate, mm-hmm. and big ag and big consumerism. All right. By the way, that's Jessica Fuyen from Food and Water Watch. We have Brian Endres, Associate Professor of Agricultural Law at the University of Illinois. I think at this point we should bring in Megan Klein, who is with the Chicago Food Policy Advisory Council. Good morning, Megan.
Good morning, Mike. Thank you for having me on the show.
My pleasure. What have we missed here in this discussion since you've been sitting there listening to us?
Well, actually, I wanted to jump in and talk about, you know, it's amazing that the legislators don't know that there are genetically modified ingredients in most of packaged foods, but it's also amazing that the public is largely unaware. You know, as we said, the people listening to this show are educated on the issue, but we have hundreds of people coming to Chicago Food Policy Advisory Council meetings every month, and they're generally interested in food, and they read up on it, and they're generally aware, and they're not aware of the genetically modified foods and the ingredients in what they eat. And when they learn about it, they are up in arms, and they want to know, and they want to know what they're feeding their families, and they find it absolutely unbelievable that things such as peanuts and everything else is labeled, but they can't, they have no way of knowing when their food has been genetically engineered or not.
The poor little peanut keeps getting vilified here. The Center for Food Safety says that currently up to 85% of U.S. corn, 85% is genetically engineered, 91% of soybeans, 88% of cotton. Cottonseed oil is often used in food products. It has been estimated that upwards of 75% of processed foods on supermarket shelves, from soda to soup, crackers to condiments, contain genetically engineered ingredients. So, you know, chances are, if you're shopping, you're buying it. And that takes us to something that Whole Foods Market did this year. In March, they announced that by 2018, all products in their U.S. and Canadian stores must be labeled to indicate whether they contain GMOs. Well, if they start doing that and it proves successful, doesn't that sort of pave the way for other markets to do that? Anybody?
So I think that it does, but I think there's a really important distinction that we need to draw, and which is that voluntary labeling or the ability for companies to put a GMO label on their food, that exists now, and hardly anyone participates in that voluntary labeling scheme. And maybe we'll see over long periods of time that private companies or brands are interested in creating that label to access a new consumer market. But at Food and Water Watch, we really think that this needs to be regulated.
So you're saying that the people who shop at Whole Foods are likely to be interested in this, but it's not going to have a general effect.
I wouldn't say that. I don't think that I have the kind of information to make that prediction. But what I would say is this. We have things like the Non-GMO Project, where companies can pay to get certified as non-GMO and have this label. But very, very few products, a very small percentage of products, do this. And it's a part of that is because it costs money. And to me, you know, right now, if we wanted to avoid GMOs, we could buy all organic all the time. But I personally, even I've got a great job, and I don't think that I could afford to go all organic all the time. And for me,
you could grow your own, which is what we advocate on this show.
This is true.
Grow as much of your own as possible.
This is a justice issue. If we want everybody, regardless of their economic status, to have access to what they can confidently know is a non-GMO product, what we need is a bill that means that all foods are regulated and not just foods at what I might consider to be specialty food grocers.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM this morning. Just to get you going on a Sunday morning, we're talking GMOs. And I have a couple of guests in the studio, and they are Jessica Fuyen, who is with Food and Water Watch, and Brian Endres, who's Associate Professor of Agricultural Law at the University of Illinois. And on the phone, I have Megan Klein, who's a lawyer on the Chicago Food Policy Advisory Council. And we also have a phone call, so let's go to line two and bring in Bill. Bill, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hey, Mike. Great show as always. And yeah, you did get me fired up with this one.
Oh, well.
It seems like we're losing the messaging battle, and I know some of that has to do with the money, as your guest indicated a few moments ago. And I think a big part of that is we're not addressing the fact that are properly addressing the fact that if these companies, which I see on Fox News all the time and all these right wing shows, are always applauding the free market system, really don't believe in the free market system, because if they did, they would allow us the information to make informed choices. That's the free market. Not this. So I guess my question is, what is being done to counter that really harsh but pervasive messaging from the right wing and from these corporations who are making huge profits on this? So really, a couple of pennies to label thousands and thousands of labels really is not going to affect their bottom line. These guys spend more on lunch than they would spend on ink and labeling for marking these products.
You know, your point is really a good one. It's an excellent one, Bill. And you're right that we have an illusion of a free market. There's really no such thing.
Free for them. It's not free for us. It's free for them.
And it's manipulated within an inch of its life. And then, the folks, they come on and say, hey, let the market do its thing. And then, of course, when you try to let the market do its thing, which is let's label it. Oh, no, you'll kill our business.
Precisely. And in this marketing world, it seems like messaging is everything. And I'm just really curious, you know, what the strategy is to get ahead of that messaging, which I think, if we really have that strong messaging and can get in front of their arguments, which I, you know, there's some legal heavyweights there among your guests.
I think he means you, Brian.
Like a court of law, and get ahead of that. And I think that helps offset the difference in funds that we can bring to bear to get the word out.
That's a really
the endless amount of money they can.
Yeah, really great point, Bill and Brian. I'm going to anticipate what you would say is you'd say I'm not the messaging guy. I'm the legal analyst here.
Yeah, but I also am a consumer too, and that's important to think about. Is that and the one thing that can do this is the consumers, you know, being educated about this topic and demanding some sort of change, and that's what's going to drive change in the food system.
And Jessica?
Yeah, I could also say, Bill, I believe your name was Bill. Thanks for your great comment. And yeah. I think what's important to know is not that we have to be. Well, first of all, we've got responses to everything the industry has to throw at us. And mm-hmm. when you say, how are we going to respond to this in terms of messaging? What you're really saying is, how is our voice going to be heard in the media? Because it's not that we don't respond to these comments. It's that we need more publicity and we need to be heard in the media. And so obviously we do all we can on that front.
Absolutely.
But much like large corporations have influence in the legislature, they always have a great deal of influence in the media. And so one of the ways, kind of in the way that we can make or assert our power as consumers, we can make informed choices, like Brian was saying. Mm-hmm. As individuals, we can write to the media. I think that if there are people listening right now who have not done so already, it's important that we send letters to the editor, op-eds to the media, and make sure the media knows that there is, you know, a parallel or a counter argument to a lot of the messaging that the biotech industry has the money to promote, you know, on Fox News or by buying a commercial slot.
Yeah, and if I could put in a shameless plug, Revolution in Beer will be doing several pieces about this, highlighting the profit issue, but trying to get ahead of those messages. And we would, you know, we'll be doing that in support of what you guys are doing this week. So thank you so much. And people can get that article at revolutionandbeer.com this week.
Yeah. W.C. Turk.
Yes.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you, buddy.
And I'm glad you're listening and I'm glad you're concerned
always
with this. And give yourself a plug one more time at
revolutionandbeer.com. We'll be hitting the GMO issue and trying to get ahead of some of that messaging. And the one thing that we would encourage, because it's what we do, is folks get out there and occupy the media. Take this message to your neighbors, to your friends, to Facebook, to the internet, and proliferate it everywhere. And that's how we offset that a little bit. But I want to applaud your guests for their great work. Thank you for that. And thank you, as always, Mike, for your great work. So,
all right.
Best of luck, guys. Good night.
Appreciate it, Bill. Talk to you later. And he makes a really good point. About the media in covering these issues, and perhaps it's my own fault, but I missed it when the bill was first proposed, and I just found out about it the other week that this was coming up. Sarah Batka helped me, who's in studio today, and by the way, so is Carol Brewer. Thank you both for being here. I was a little surprised, but I'm not anymore, because I cover issues on this show. And often for my research, I will go online and see what the coverage has been, and often nothing, you know. And I start with the two biggies. I start with the biggies, the Chicago media, generally Sun-Times and Trib, if it's a local issue or a regional issue. I see what they've had, and often it's crickets chirping, and so I have to go farther afield, and that is part of the problem. A lot of these things slip through the cracks, and I think partly it is the control of the media, but I also think it's partly that a lot of the media have no money anymore. They don't have the resources. The reporters that were there covering some of these things, I mean, City Hall beat doesn't get covered the way it should anymore. I think it's being taken over. That job has to be done now by our bloggers and the people online. That's sort of the way these things are going. You don't find them as much in the mainstream, simply because they don't have the resources to do it. And other issues. I mean, it's a complex, problem. You're shaking your head like you don't believe me, Jessica.
No, I'm not shaking my head like I don't believe you. I definitely think that one of the ways that we can break into the media is by having more people submit writing about these issues. I think that we're not definitely responsible for doing their job for them, but by creating the kind of buzz that the media covers, we will get more coverage. And I also think that that it's definitely up to some of these publications' editorial boards to take the issue seriously or not.
Okay, let's take another phone call quickly. Let us go to Todd. Todd, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Thank you. Hey, I don't disagree with the labeling. I'm okay with it. But aren't you being just a little disingenuous by not mentioning the fact that the campaign's out there for Franken genes? I don't see how you're going to feed the world through organic or not manipulating genes, whether it be in the lab or in the field. And I'm a farmer, and I think you'd be better off concentrating on patents on food rather than its labeling.
Okay, that's a really good point, Todd. Anybody care to address that here?
The one thing is that this is just trying to inform consumers. It's not excluding GM from the market. It's just if you're going to put it in the market, it needs to be labeled. And if there's a price differential, maybe it's less expensive, maybe it's more expensive. You know, that'll sort itself out. With respect to the patents, you know, that's a bigger system that we have. And the Supreme Court actually dealt with it this past year on the patentability of biotech seeds. And unfortunately, for a lot of farmers, the Supreme Court upheld the intellectual property rights for the Monsantos and DuPonts of the world. So taking on that at the state level is not a solution because that's a federal patent law.
Mm-hmm.
So good point.
And I would also like to add, we thank Todd so much for the work he does as a farmer and all farmers for doing the work that they do to feed the world. But we have to underscore that biotechnology is not a solution to global hunger, that we are currently producing 2,800 calories per day per person, and that hunger is not an issue of how much corn or genetically modified soy we can produce. It's a problem of access. I mean, a lot of that food goes to feed our livestock. And I also wanted to kind of underscore that in 2009, the International Assessment of Agriculture Knowledge and Science and, I'm sorry, and Technology, which was put forth by about 400 scientists sponsored by the UN, sponsored by the World Bank, they concluded that biotech was not a solution to global hunger problems, and that biotechnology has actually done quite a bit to undermine local markets in developing countries. So what we see is that biotechnology is certainly not a solution to world hunger. However, farmers responding to market demand for transparent food products, I mean, we know that farmers are going to be able to feed the world, and that consumers will be happy to help them do that when we've got the kind of labeling we need.
You know, and we haven't even brought up the issues. There are side issues with this, and this is about labeling. But other things that we have to take into consideration is the creation of super weeds by GMO products, which is not part of this issue, but it is there. It is out there. And I wrote about it, and I hope folks will go to my website, MikeNovak.net, go to this week's show. I've got a lot of links there, a lot of information, including the information about the public hearing that's happening. And I want to remind people that it's happening this Tuesday, 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 a.m., the Blandick Building, 160 North LaSalle Room, Room C600. You can sign up to be part of the audience. I have a link on my website that takes you to Food and Water Watch where they can sign you up. Let's take one more quick question before we wrap this up. And Bob, you're on the Mike Novak Show. Good morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, it's just in regards to GMOs, not all GMOs are done by mad scientists in a laboratory. If you look at corn, for example, that was genetically modified by the Aztec Indians over 5,000 years ago. Corn, as we know it today, was a weed. I mean, it was just a little, it was a wild plant that had flower and it produced no fruit. We have the safest food production in the world that we've ever seen on this planet. I mean, they're GMOs. Everybody says GMO, genetically modified. They think it's a really bad thing. I mean, it's protecting plants from insects. It's protecting plants from fungi. It's not all that bad. I mean, and then adding additional layers of legislation for labeling and things like that are only going to drive the cost up, not only for people in the United States that can probably afford it, but in third world countries that can't. So, I mean, like I said, I mean, which GMOs are good and which ones are bad? I mean, obviously, corn was a genetically modified plant, and that was done 5,000 years ago before there were laboratories and microscopes and things of that nature.
That's a good point, Bob, and we're going to address that right now. And the first thing I would say is that, we have modified food throughout the history of growing things, but we're at a point where we can put pig genes into corn and not just corn genes into corn. And that's the difference, is that we can take genes from other species and other genuses and put them in a way that we never did. When you did this, developed this over the millennia, you were putting corn and those grasses next to each other and then working with nature to do this. It's almost as if we're doing this despite nature in some ways. But that would be my argument. But I did want to take it to Megan to talk about he's talking about prices and availability in the city. I suspect that you would have some issue with that working in Chicago.
Well, I do, and I want to raise one issue that we haven't spoken about yet, and that is the difference between genetically modified corn 5,000 years ago and today. Today, corn is genetically modified specifically to be able to withstand herbicides, which are incredibly toxic. And people are concerned about, people may understand herbicides and the toxicity of those, but they may not understand genetically modified foods. And so while genetically modified foods themselves have not been tested, one thing that the public really wants to know is the amount of chemicals that are potentially in their food.
And that's a really good point. That's the other thing. Bob mentioned controlling insects and weeds, and the opposite is happening. We're losing control. We're losing the battle when we create weeds that are resistant to Roundup because they take on the characteristics of the GMO products. When we get plants or when we get insects, we're creating super insects as well. And these are things we need to discuss. But in this case, it's a side issue. The issue is actually labeling. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say, as we wrap this up, something we've already mentioned on the show, which is, if we're truly a free market, what's the deal? Why wouldn't we be able to do this? Brian, you got any final words on this?
No, I think the key, though, is as in many pieces of legislation, you have to first get the legislators informed on what the issues are. And then the general public has to get behind this. And it's not just a Chicago versus downstate issue. There are people concerned about this issues, you know, where I am down at the University of Illinois. We care about these things. And I'd just like to see some more transparency in our food supply.
Jessica?
Yeah, I think that before we go, I think it's really important to address what Bob said, which is that hybridization has happened for thousands of years. It's very important mm-hmm. for plants that are going to be locally resistant to weather, insects, and all kinds of challenges. But that SB 1666 takes on what are basically a handful of large corporations, scientists in a lab, creating products that could never occur in nature, patenting them, and putting a lot of farmers in a financial bind. I think Bob, you know, his comments came from the right place. We are concerned that farmers in other countries are struggling, and they're not struggling with food prices because of GE labeling. In fact, many countries currently label GE foods, and people can't afford food. And unfortunately, in India, we have thousands of farmers who commit suicide because of debt cycles that are associated with the cost of seed and the cost of pesticides. So labeling.
Yet one more side effect of working with the genetically engineered products.
So this bill is pro-farmer. This bill is pro-hybridization, the way that farmers are able to do it on the farm. And what we want is for these handful of biotech companies to take responsibility and bear the burden of proof for foods that most of society wants labeled.
Jessica Fuyen, Food and Water Watch, Brian Endress, Associate Professor of Agricultural Law, University of Illinois. Thank you so much for being here. And Megan Klein from the Chicago Food Policy Advisory Council, thank you so much for being on the phone. I appreciate your help.
Mike, thank you so much.
All right, take care. I'll just remind people that the hearing is this Tuesday, 10:30 to 12:30. You can be part of it. Go to my website, MikeNovak.net, or go to Food and Water Watch, and you can find information, and we will continue to follow this story.